We're in Acts chapter 17. We're at verse 17. But let's read the previous verse 16, since it's a continuation, and to remind ourselves of what we were talking about. Now, while Paul was waiting for them at Athens, he was waiting for Silas and Timothy, his spirit was being provoked within him as he was observing the city full of idols. Remember, it said his spirit was provoked. Paul was an apostle prophet, like the Old Testament, and he was provoked out of his jealousy for the Lord at all of the idolatry and falseness going on, and so he felt obligated to do something about it. The spirit of the prophets was a spirit of jealousy. They were jealous for God's honor. Remember in the Old Covenant and the New, that all of these gods or idols had come up. Since mankind had fallen, and even since God wiped out mankind through the flood, man's corrupt mind and corrupt nature constantly went toward idols and removed itself from the living God, the true God, began to take on superstitions, and demonic powers began to come upon them and blind them and deceive them. And the sad thing is, people take upon themselves certain beliefs, and as we've seen even in our own cultures, they transmit these beliefs to their offspring. They are raised as children believing lies, believing falseness. And even Jesus, when he was speaking of the zeal, the perverse zeal of the Pharisees, he said they would go to the ends of the earth to make one convert and make them twice the hell or twice as worse as they were. So see, this is the danger of those who give themselves over to evil spirits and begin to pervert the true ways of God and what the truth are. Their children and grandchildren begin to be raised around this, and they accept these things more readily, being influenced by their relatives and by their peers and the people they respect. So you see that this, again, is one of the principles of how sin spreads and how the sins of the fathers are visited to the children, to the third and fourth generations. It's showing the great influence that people have over other people. And often this influence is evil. It is not good. So over a process of several thousand years, much of the known world and the unknown world had perverted the truth that they knew during Abraham's time, during Melchizedek's time, during even Job's time. They had an understanding of the Most High God. They understood who he was, the Supreme Being. Noah knew who he was. Enoch, Abel, and Seth, and others, they understood who he was. And then later, when Moses comes along and the children of Israel, we see God dealing differently with a particular people, and his intention was to make them a light to the world, to give a witness of who he was to other nations and people. But during this process, the people had spread out through the world since the Babel incident, when God confused their languages because they were honoring themselves and their structures, and God decided as a punishment to spread them out and break that power hold, and that's what he did. He gave them various languages, and they could not understand other languages. And then they began to cease building, and they started to spread to different parts of the earth. So it's believed that they were somewhere in the Middle East, so what we know is Iraq and Iran and those areas. And then from there we can see easily they could go east into India and ultimately China, the furthermost part of Asia. Or they could go west and northwest into Europe and to the Russias and so forth. And then they could go south and southeast and go into Africa. And that's what happened. Again, as the hundreds of years passed and as generations passed, these people took on different beliefs. Each generation took on what it was taught or what it was told, mixed with more, mixed with other things. And as we've seen happen in almost every religion, Then the new people come along, they're so-called new prophets with new revelation, and they add more, and they add more, and they take away from the truth, and they take away from the truth. And this is the demonic influence of what happens when the god of this world, Satan, blinds them as they go willingly into their rebellion, and they refuse to follow the conscience that God has given them. God allows them to come under the corruption and the influence of demonic powers, and they go from darkness to darkness, from sin to sin. And this is the consequence. So when Paul had come to Athens, and he came to the area where all of the people gathered, and they had many idols, they had many temples to various gods and deities and goddesses, and this disturbed him. Him not only being a devout Jew and being a Pharisee of Pharisees, but to come into this area, it's implied that he had not been to an area this outwardly that promoted so publicly and outwardly such divinities and such idols. And so it grieved him, the word it provoked him, to challenge them, to give them some truth, to expose the deceptions that they were in. And while he was waiting for Silas and Timothy to join him, he decided to do something. And he was given authority. We sometimes forget that apostolic authority and prophetic authority was not directly always directed by the Holy Spirit from day to day. They were guided by the Spirit, but often if we read what they were given in their writings, we find they were given authority and they could use their sound mind. They could get up and they could decide that I'm going to go and talk to people about the Lord. They didn't have to wait till the Spirit immediately told them to do something. Usually find why they were doing what common sense told them to do. It was as they were moving along, using their renewed mind and the wisdom God had given them, then the Spirit, the Helper, would come along and give them more precise direction. Again, the general word of God to the apostles and disciples was given years before when the Lord said, go into all the world and proclaim the gospel, teaching them to observe everything I've told you. They had already been given the commission. They had already been given the mandate. They already understood what was required of them. And yet they sought to be guided, and they were guided. And we see the various times that Paul, as we study him through the epistles, sometimes he spent months and sometimes a year or two in one location simply doing pastoral work and teaching. We don't read of him doing many miracles or anything out of the ordinary. He simply did what was required and what he understood to do. And then as he moved on in the apostolic ministry, then we see God giving him more precise direction and guidance to keep him from being killed before his time. And he sought wisdom, and he got wisdom from the Lord. But he in his own renewed mind could sit and ponder these things and be disturbed. His nature, the godly nature in him, would be disturbed, and he wanted to do something about it. So Paul was a man of actions. He was a public person. Having been a Pharisee of Pharisees, he was used to open debate. He was used to discoursing with other people and arguing points and so forth. So this would be nothing new for him. And in his travels, he had made many converts with his helpers, and they had already confronted various false religions that attacked him. And so this was really nothing new, but I think it was the magnitude of where he was. This was one of the most prolific, famous areas in the whole Roman Empire. Remember, the Roman world, much of its teachings and beliefs came from the previous Greeks and Macedonians who ruled before the Roman time. And so this was sort of a center of religiosity, and it had gone on for hundreds and hundreds of years. There are many temples and deities, and it was a religious system. It was a religious world that they lived in. So this was what was going on. So he was observing the city full of idols. And again, that implies full of idolatrous. Everyone who prayed to these who they believe were divine beings, they called them gods. They called them goddesses, deities. So we understand on a lesser term, because we understand the truth, we know there is only the one true God. And we will find out later that Paul will mention
things about these gods and deities and actually what's behind them. And yet we have to understand the people of the Roman Empire this time, the people of the world of that time, were all given over to various gods and beliefs. They were very superstitious people. They believed a lot in omens. They believed a lot in divination. Almost all the religions had some practice of oracles. You pay what we would call witches and soothsayers. They were held in high regard, and they would interpret signs and dreams and sacrifices. As we study these things, we'll see, as in the book of Leviticus, there were certain powers that were imitation of even the divine gifts. Divination was simply a counterfeit or an imitation of the gift of prophecy, of God speaking to the prophets. So for every ministry and gift that God used and persons he used in every covenant, there were always those who Satan raised up to counterfeit, to imitate, or to pervert. And this has been the religious warfare and the spiritual warfare that has gone on since the fall of Adam and Eve in the garden. So this was what was going on. This was the area that Paul dealt with. And in verse 17 of chapter 17, so he was reasoning in the synagogue with the Jews and with the God-fearing Gentiles, and in the marketplace every day with those who happened to be present. Notice repeatedly, Paul goes to the Jewish synagogues when he goes into new areas, as he's told us was his custom to go for two or three Sabbaths and go to the synagogue and reason with them and speak to them. Because of his background, and because he was considered a very learned person, a very intellectual at his time, once they knew he was a Pharisee and he understood Judaism so well, most synagogues, if they had no special message from Jerusalem warning them about Paul, they would welcome him. They would see him as someone who could share something. And that was their custom and their manner, that visiting Jews that were knowledgeable, they would often be given the opportunity, we would say, to speak a sermon, to give a sermon or to give a talk. And this is what they did. And they could debate if they wanted to. They could share things that were going in. And so this was what Paul did. He took these opportunities and he would proceed to speak from what they understood of Judaism, and he would lead them in to what we understand as the New Testament or the New Covenant. So again, this was his manner of what he usually did. And again, notice he reasoned and he proclaimed, but a reasoning, he talked with them. He brought up things. He asked questions to make them think. And then he presented the truths of the gospel that were in conjunction and actually were in harmony with sound Old Testament prophets. So this was basically what he was doing. It says he even preached and taught, is what it means, in the open marketplaces. So these were public areas. Today we would probably call them flea markets, farmers markets, and things that were out in the open where people brought their goods and had the little stands and tables, and the public came together at these places. And there were also places where people could stand up and proclaim their religious beliefs or their political beliefs. Remember, in the Roman Empire and in this area, often there were political things going on. There were paid politicians, as we found in the Roman world. Everybody had their clients. Everybody had those who worked under them and promoted them for their various, what we would call, elections. Much of it was simply bribery and buying each other off. But again, that was the system of the time. So these were public places where everything came out and everything was talked about. We talked about that in the past. Remember when Jesus made the statement, he said to his disciples, "What you have heard in secret." He meant among our private conversations and when I've been teaching you. He said, "Proclaim it upon the rooftop." And again, in our culture, many don't understand what that meant, but in the Jewish system, they had many of their homes on the city walls and in and out the cities or surrounded them and joined to them. They had what we call patios or flat roofs. when the heat of the sun was going down and the ground was still hot, they would go up and they would have these, what we would call umbrellas and awnings and things to protect from the shade. And as the sun went down, the breeze would start up and it would be a cool, become cool. And people would often eat and bring their meals up there. And because they were so close to each other, people would be talking to their neighbors. People would be talking across the roofs and the patios. And often when it was real hot, they would actually drag their bedding up and sleep as it got night. But it became a public place where people began to share family problems, talk about the politics of the day, religion, or anything. And again, it was the same thing. So basically, this was a command of Jesus. You know, what you've heard in private, share publicly. Well, this was the means. Outside of meeting in the temple courts, the outer courts of the temple, there was no other place that they could legally gather other than inside synagogues and people's private homes. Remember, the Romans ruled, and they were very strict on not allowing large numbers of people gather because they often had rioting and they had things going on and thievery. And so they were very strict. So you could only meet in certain places without stirring up public attention. But on their homes, on their houses, everybody did this. So again, they were simply sharing. And so we find the same thing here. They gathered, they brought their wares and their goods to sell, and they took time sharing and communicating whatever was going on in their city, whatever was they'd heard from Rome and various parts of the world, of what was going on. And this was what Paul used it as a place to proclaim and share the gospel with these people. Again, we live in the Western world. We don't understand how great an influence religion was so much a part of their lives. The Romans, the Greeks, everybody, they were very religious. It was like the Catholicism of the Dark Ages. You could not separate politics from religion. They were so intertwined. So where today people might gather at places, bars and saloons and places like that to drink and to share, they'll talk about sports and football and all the sport things that go on. Well, back then it was basically more religion and politics that was discussed because there were such changes that were constantly happening throughout the Roman Empire. There was always rebellion somewhere. There were always treachery going on. There were always various leaders who were corrupt. And so this, again, was a part of their lifestyle. So this was a place of commerce, and this would be a place of discourses for whatever the people wanted to talk about. Okay, so now we go on to verse 18. And some of the Epicurean and the Stoic philosophers were conversing with him. Some were saying, "What will this idle babbler wish to say?" And others would say, "Well, he seems to be proclaiming some strange deities because he was preaching Jesus and the resurrection." So obviously it didn't take long for Paul to begin and then to finally get to what he wanted to talk about. So again, these people are here, these Epicureans and these Stoic philosophers, their main teachings came from several hundred years earlier. They promoted sometimes pleasure-seeking as an end in itself. They looked for a life free of pain, and those who had more morals would try to avoid what they called bad passions. And some would go so far, which in their world was strange, they would try to avoid superstitious fears. That was hard to do in the culture they lived in. And others were promoting self-sufficiency, power over your emotions. You don't let your emotions rule you. And some of these went so far as to privately say they didn't really believe in any of the gods, that they were just superstition. Well, that was something you could not do often publicly. You had to be careful who you shared something like that with. But some of the more learned ones, or intellectuals, were like they were today in many universities. We would call them atheists, agnostics. And these were the same type. But there were many other things being shared, religions, that they did believe in. Verses 19 and 20. And they took him, and they brought him to the Areopagus, saying, "May we know what this new teaching is which you are proclaiming." And verse 20, "For you are bringing some strange things to our ears, so we want to know what these things mean." this area, it is a place, the King James translates it, and that's what we would probably remember more, called Mars Hill. And there was actually courts and gathering places where people could sit and listen to those who would orientate and those who would speak. But basically there was a group of about 30 men here who were selected from out the community according to their wealth and their intellect and their power. And they had power over the religious matters that came in to Athens. So this was an official thing. So when they invited Paul, it wasn't as if he could decide not to come. They had power to do this, to call into account, because there were certain religious beliefs that they would not permit, once they heard it, to be propagated, because it would speak against Rome or it would undermine their systems that they accepted. So again, they were careful not to allow something too extreme from what they understood to come and stir up trouble. We have to always keep in mind, in the Roman world, they had to always be careful that there was never anything, politics or religion, that led to open rioting or problems, because then the Romans would come in with their iron hand and break things up and sometimes put to death their leaders and put the whole system under what we would call probation. They did not permit these things. So again, it was up to these local powers to maintain order and not bring Rome's attention to them, because Rome did not want to be bothered with these things. They wanted people to get along, support Rome, and pay their taxes. That's what they were interested in. And they wanted commerce to go throughout the empire, because they saw that's how growth happened and that's how monetary and the economy did well. But anytime there was rioting, anytime there was local warring, this affected the economy. So ultimately, the Romans would have to intervene. And as we said before, they were ruthless in their dealings. Often they just came in and killed many people and put a stop to things, and everything got quiet for a while. So this is a group of around 30 men who have the authority to hear what's being said in the area where the people came and shared, up in these courts areas, courtyards and stuff, and these philosophers would gather. And if it was too extreme or radical where they felt it caused problems with the public or Rome, they would obviously call this person in. So it wasn't really an invitation, even though it may have been politely done. You understood that you had to come. In a sense, it would be like you were summoned. And this was what happened. So the officials, some of them had already got the rumors, and they had already had people who had heard what Paul said, and they wanted further clarification on what he was talking about. They wanted to see, and since he brought up the resurrection, and they understood from what Paul was saying, another deity, and it was probably Jesus, the Christ he was proclaiming, as God, as the Son of God. He was probably coming to this, and this was catching their attention. And so again, they wanted to know what was going on here. So if it was dangerous, they could forbid it. They could actually have the power to exile people out of Athens and tell them, you can't do this here, get out. And that's the kind of authority they had. Verse 21, well, let's go back to 20. It says, and they took him, okay, and they wanted to know, what is this new teaching in which you are proclaiming? Notice they called it new because it was something they hadn't heard before. Verse 20 said, for you are bringing some strange things to our ears, and we want to know about these things. So notice the two things they said, something new and something strange. And that would catch their attention. They wanted to be sure that they understood this before they permitted. See, they didn't know whether Paul was going to take up residence in Athens and become a local philosopher, like many of them did, and sit there and share their stuff all day long. This is what they did. And it'll tell us in verse 21, now all of the Athenians and the strangers visiting there used to spend their time in nothing other than telling or hearing something new. So it wasn't that they weren't used to something new. It's what they were saying that they wanted to catch. The thing that made the Jews and the Christians, which at this time much of the Christians were still believed by the heathen to be a sect or an offshoot of Judaism. They were connected as far as they were concerned. And the thing that brought them trouble for many periods of time on and off, even with the emperors, is that they proclaimed only one deity, the supreme being, and that was in conflict with the Roman world and with the Greek world. Now, as we've said before, even whoever was the emperor at the time, whoever was the Caesar, he was considered a local deity. He was considered a god. So again, when someone came preaching that all these other gods were not real, well, again, you're asking for trouble. And this is why the Jews earlier and the Christians in the Roman Empire in the first century, why they got so much persecution is because they were considered by all in the Roman world as being bigoted, as being narrow-minded. See, they were willing. Rome was very good at accommodating. They'd take over a nation and they let them keep their religion and do whatever they want as long as they paid their taxes and as long as they showed proper respect for Rome and the emperor. They didn't care. They felt they did good. And actually, if we study the Roman Empire, the Roman Empire never was an original thinker in itself. They were excellent at accommodating and taking on everybody else. Much of the Roman systems and beliefs came from the Greeks. They were known to improve on some things. So they were good at logistics. They were good at taking on new ideas and improving them. Often they conquered certain German, what we call tribes then, and certain Arabic countries. And they found out that they knew how to use certain kind of weapons better than they did. And so what did the Romans do? They began to take these things and improve on them. So they were very good at doing this. They were not fixed a system. They looked at things, and if they saw something worked practically, they'll incorporate it into their own system. So this was why they were good to a degree in uniting and maintaining order throughout their empire. They were feared. They were ruthless. But if you did what you were told and you didn't create any problems, you could do very well in the Roman Empire. They didn't go out of their way to cause you problems unless you caused them problems. And so they overlooked the empire and they allowed the religions to go on. They allowed the customs to go on. They were used to mixing and compromising. They were very good at this. Even Pilate did this very well. And the Roman governors of Judea and Syria, they often did not publicly go out of their way to insult the Jewish customs unless there was rebellion, unless something was done to offend Rome. Then they had no scruples and they would do whatever was necessary. But again, Pilate was very careful, even though he ruled Judea and he couldn't stand the high priest and their family and they hated him. It's believed that he never went into their palaces and their areas of rule purposely where he could have done this if he wanted to assault them and they could have done nothing about it. He purposely did not provoke them unless it was a retaliation for an insult to Rome or something they were doing. Then he had no second thoughts about what he would do. So Rome was very accommodating. Judaism and Christianity, because they only believed in the supreme being, they were considered public enemies. They were considered too radical for these religions of this system. Most Romans, they had picked up many of their gods were simply name changes of the Greek gods from hundreds of years earlier. So they would use, for example, Zeus could be used and Apollo. And yet if you understood, they basically were the same being under different people addressing them and how the cultures changed and mixed. So they had different names. In the Roman world, they not only had they believed in certain gods over certain cities that protected them. Years later, the Roman Catholics picked up on this. In the Dark Ages and up until the 17th century, there were certain saints worshipped in certain parts of France and Germany and Spain, and they believed that a certain saints actually protected their particular city, and when they went to war, that he would help them. But they never could rationalize how when they were warring with another Catholic nation, how one saint could side with the French and one could side with Spain. They never sort of would discuss that because they didn't have no answer for it, since the kingdom was divided. Of course, we know it was demonic powers behind all of this. So again, this was the system, the Christian and the Jew at this time. They were in totally different belief system that was not acceptable in general and was not popular among the Roman world. The Romans not only had deities for their city, for their country, for certain trades, for certain things they did. They had the war god, they had the love god, they had all this. In each Roman home, they had the personal deities. Sometimes they were departed relatives. Sometimes they were someone who was well-known, and they would set up little idols in their home, as the later Roman Catholics would set up little statues of who they believed were the saints. And again, they were very superstitious. You had to do certain things on certain days. You had to offer certain foods. You had to be very careful. And so the Christians saw this as nonsense. And the Jews saw this as nonsense. And so they had to be more careful. And this was why even the Jews, for hundreds of years, had spurts of persecution within the Roman Empire, because they were blamed for a lot. Anytime something went wrong, it was because these people don't believe in the true gods, and they're narrow-minded, and this is usually how many times they got persecuted. And the Jews had a bad reputation, which was true, for being arrogant among the Roman Empire. They were, many of them were pharisaical, and because they believed they were the elite, instead of it making them humble, it did what it did to the Pharisee. It made them look down on other people with contempt. It made them not want to invite them to their homes. They gave the attitude and the expression that you're not worthy to be in my presence. Well, that provoked many of these people in the Roman Empire. So when there were problems, political problems, the Jews often got blamed for it simply because they had many enemies. Often it was not over, most of the time. It was not over their sincere religion. Okay, so again, they spent all their time. They had certain philosophers, and many of these were paid by the particular religion and groups that they supported to try to make converts or to win over their philosophy on others. They tried to make disciples, so this was common too. But again, they were not, as they would call, as dogmatic or narrow-minded as the Jew and later the Christian became, because they were willing to give and take. This attitude, live and let live. Oh, you worship that God? Well, that's nice, and I have this one. So when I come over, I'll honor your God, and when you come to my house, you'll honor mine, and there's no problem with this. But see, the Jew and the Christian did have a problem with this, and it created a lot of persecutions for them. At verse 22, so Paul stood in the midst of, we know it as Mars Hill, and he said, men of Athens, I observe that you are very religious in all respects. Good they put that word there, because some of them that translated this used a different word. But here at Mars Hill, the Athenians and visiting strangers, they simply spent all their time discussing, debating, evaluating the new religious ideas and their philosophies, and they tried to get other people to accept their belief. Or if they found something interesting in someone else's beliefs, they would try to incorporate that. Very Roman of them, I agreed to do this. So again, he had said, you're religious in all respects. Actually, the earlier, not the true translations, but some of them took words, even the King James, which is very good on a lot of its proper translation, I think it a little too far hand. It uses the word, you were very superstitious. Well, it's believed from the words used that Paul would not have used that word, because Paul was addressing religious authorities, and we find in the times he was called into account, he never started off purposely insulting people. He never started off purposely trying to provoke them. Paul was a person who used and understood manners and customs, and he would have been very polite, and he would have discussed things until he got to the matter of truth, and then he would speak what he saw as the truth. These are religious leaders and authorities, and if he had started off saying you're very superstitious, that would immediately close most of their minds to him, and they would have already saw him as an enemy. Again, the better word that they did translate, you are religious in all respects, and that's probably more closer to what he used at this particular time. So again, let's remember, we often see Paul when he seems to be on the defensive. But in many of these areas Paul went to, he went in and he tried to start on common ground and proceed from there. Remember later we're going to see, he said he becomes all things to all men. And we'll see in this case, he used their own beliefs and stuff where he could to build on and to proceed to give the gospel from that point, rather than, I don't believe that Paul walked up to him and said, you're all ignorant idolaters and you're on your way to hell. this is not the way he started it, and he knew that would not be a way to get people to listen or even halfway consider what you had to say. You don't purposely do that, and we'll find the Pharisees did do that, and that's why they were hated, and that's why they had so much trouble. Let's go ahead and take a break here.